9:10, page 9:10 for Parshas Matos. You know, I wrote an article, a very interesting article. I mean, I think it's interesting I wrote it. In the Jewish Action, you might have noticed, they send me a whole carton of them. I put them out so people have read them.
Yeah, but that was...
It was a while ago, 6 months ago, yeah. Right, about the relationship of Aliyah to the American Jewish community.
I bet you got a lot of flack, too.
Oh, yeah, big time flack. But it's also true. Everything
I've
said is true.
I just could see the letters coming.
You know, the response has been very, very interesting. What did I say?
Yeah.
You have to read it.
We don't get the Jewish
name. Well, it's
the Jewish Action. It's the Orthodox Union Jewish Action.
It's on the counter.
Yeah, there are a bunch of them still on the counter, maybe. Anyway, in a nutshell, I said that the American Orthodox community loses a lot of people, a lot of its most highly qualified or most dedicated people because they make Aliyah. Which is a good thing, but it hurts the American Jewish community. So now, what it did was, the article highlighted for me, and I've been thinking about this a lot, the relationship between the American Jewish community, the American from Jewish community, but also the Israeli Jewish community. What are our responsibilities vis-a-vis the Jewish community in Israel? You know, how much achrayus do we have to them? How much achrayus do we have to ourselves first? So much of the response I got was, so what? So your best and your brightest are making Aliyah and moving to Israel? Good. You know what I'm saying? You're not quite copying it. All I did was I wrote about the fact that when the people who make Aliyah, by and large, are your generally in the young Israel community, are the most committed, most dedicated, and most active people.
Correct.
Right? Think about the people in Detroit, from Detroit, that have moved to Israel in the past 30 years. Okay? People have been here 30 years. You can think about, I'm sure, at least 20, 30 families. Okay? Now, what would our community be like had those people stayed in America? You understand what I'm saying? How much different would the community be?
But look what it means
here. All I did was I highlighted the issue. So a number of people from Israel, the response I got was, well, what do you think we are, traitors to the American Jewish community? I mean, that's life. Life goes on, and you have to, you know, that's right. There was definitely a backlash, but you have to realize that that's a reality. Mm-hmm. So the question you have to ask yourself is, to where does our primary allegiance lie when we live here in Detroit? Are we responsible first and foremost to ourselves, to our community needs? Or, in a very interesting but weird set way, are we responsible first and foremost to Jewish people living in Israel? And only then do we have the ability and the right to take care of our own needs. And do we make that kind of priority in the right way? Do we establish our priorities in that same way?
You know, that's the way we should be. I don't know if everybody feels that.
I don't think it is that way. In reality, I don't think it is.
But I think we should be that way.
We support Israel.
It's interesting. On the federation level, they give a tremendous amount of money to Israel.
They need it.
Not the way ours does. On the federation level, I mean, do you know what the percentages are? It's
like 60-40 or something.
It's like at least 50%, I think.
And the other thing is that, and I didn't notice, Candle and Hall, before they did it, Leonard and I would walk in there before they did it, and like, we were gas telling you this, because we've got all this money, and it's like nothing. And the story is that in the 67 war, or the 73 war, when they were refurbishing with the Big J or doing something or whatever, or building it, that they realized that they could put a ton of money in this building or they could send it to Eric Strauss.
Uh-huh.
And they sent it to Eric Strauss.
Right.
I was flabbergasted because
it's just very interesting. Even when we choose to give our own personal tzedakah or our own personal efforts, you know, do we focus our energy, our tzedakah, first and foremost on our local communities? In a way, you're supposed to. Then, yeah, Ircha Kodmin. Yeah, but what about? But when you look at it on a communal level, what's supposed to come first? And interestingly enough, the model for this appears in our parsha, as you'll soon see quite well. It says, you know, and we're talking about a community, not individuals, but as a community, the community of American Jewry, versus a community of Israeli Jewry, of the Jewish community where they're supposed to be. Says the Torah. I'm on chapter, page 910, Perek Lamed Beis. U'mipnei Rav, hayal livnei Reuven, v'livnei Gad atzum mo'od. Reuven and Gad had a tremendous amount of cattle. Vayiru es eretz Yazer, v'es eretz Gilad, v'hineh ha'makom makom b'kneh. Okay? Where are they traveling? They're traveling the Eber HaYarden, on the east bank of the Jordan River. They just conquered the land on the east bank of the Jordan River. Very frantic. Attack of the killer cell phone. Okay. And it was a place that was very fertile for cattle. Vayavo b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven. Vayomru el Moshe. And they said to Moshe, Ve'el Elazar ha-Kohen v'el Mishiei ha-Eda le'mor. And to Elazar ha-Kohen and to the elders of the community said, Atarot, Pasuk Gimel, Atarot v'divon v'yazer v'nimra v'cheshbon v'el alei u'shiva munevo u'ba'on. Ha'aretz asher hika ha-sem l'vnei adat Yisrael, eretz miknehi, v'la'avadecha mikneh. It's a really nice place. It's a very fertile land. It's bland land that's good for cattle, for grazing, for sheep. We have sheep. Vayamur, they said, Imatzanu chen ve'inecha, Yutan hash es er haaretz hazos la'avadecha la'achuza, al ta'avireinu et hayarden. We'll take this. We don't want to go over the Jordan River. And we'll stay here. What's the reaction to the request? I mean, we all know, I assume you know what Moshe's reaction to the request is. Right. What's your reaction to their request?
Gee, this sounds very familiar.
Separating himself from the
what?
Real shape around that.
Why?
Well, they don't have the Amin in the Canaan.
They don't have
the different tribes.
Why not? Why are there no tribes now? Now with these places that they're talking about, why are there no tribes? Why are there no other nations to destroy that are going to infiltrate and give them problems?
They've already seen the wonders that have happened.
What's that?
The wonders that have happened in
the Midbar. What do you mean? No. The wonders are going to stop. But think about it yourself. Picture a map of the Middle East now. They're now on the east bank of the Jordan River, and they know the Jewish people are going to conquer the west bank of the Jordan River. Mm-hmm. What about the nations that were on the east bank? What about those nations? What happened to them?
They conquered them already.
They beat them already. No, they beat them. They destroyed them.
So they're safe.
So you think that they're making a request saying, oh, it's safe here, we don't want to fight anymore?
No.
They don't want to fight with the other ones for the other ones.
No, we know what's going to happen in the end. I'm asking now, what's the nature of their request right now? Why are they asking for what they're asking for?
Because it's good for what they want. They want
to feed their animals.
The land is good.
Moreover, what do you know about the land of Israel vis-a-vis the animals?
Only what the spies told them.
What? But there's not a lot of grass there. It's not fertile for cattle. Right? So let me ask you, on face value, I'm a cattle person. Does it seem like does it seem like they're easy to
know? No. They want to be right near the Jordan where it's fertile.
Yeah.
Right. Why should they go?
Now, by the way, from a security point of view, what makes more sense?
The cross over.
Because if they had conquered the whole of the land of Israel, perhaps from a security point of view, they could create perimeter, they could create boundaries.
But they should stay together.
What?
To stay together.
Now, what's interesting to note also, ultimately, if you know, you study the Navi, what happens when they enter the land of Israel? What happens to the conquering of the land?
They fight all these tribes.
Okay, they fight all these nations, and what happens in the end? Do they conquer all the land?
No,
they never do.
They got those Philistines.
The Philistines are there. Amalek is there. No, they're not Palestinians. They're Philistines.
I call them Palestinians. Right. Too much like
don't call. The problem is if you call them Palestinians,
you're giving them a name.
Oh, you're giving them historical precedent.
Yeah, you're right.
Which they are not.
Which they are definitely.
Correct. Does anybody else get the New York Times?
Mm-hmm. No.
Everyone should make an effort to read the Netanyahu's piece in the New York Times today.
Is it online?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
He said we built a fence so that the terrorists wouldn't kill us, and we're not about to give up Jewish lives for the sake of fairness for Palestinian land, which doesn't really belong to them in the first place.
Good for him.
Yeah, you should read it. It's a very important read.
They probably said, oh, it was a great decision, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So this is, they're not even an individual.
Here is the question. Hey, Mrs. Barnes asked a good question. Listen carefully. She said, they're not in Israel yet. Can you see me? Okay. They're not in Israel yet. Well, they're not in... What is it? What is Israel? What defines what Israel is? Later on, there are two definitions of Israel. One definition of Israel is the land that God designates for the Jewish people, the land that's designated as the Jewish land. The other aspect of Jewish land is the land that was conquered, land that's sanctified as Jewish land. What's that?
It's not the same. I mean, didn't they conquer the land that God designated for us to have?
Apparently, well, here's the question. When they ask for this land on the east bank of the Jordan River, does Moshe say you're allowed to stay there, but it's unsanctified land?
No,
no.
Gave it to us.
Or no, they conquered it. Or meaning it's a halachic question. I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know off the top of my head the answer to this question. But let's say, for example, where they have to bring trumot and ma'asrot from that land on the east bank of the Jordan River. Meaning, there are many mitzvot that are only tuliyot of Eretz Yisrael that depend on the land of Israel. So did those mitzvot also apply in that conquered land in that time? Well, give me a good example, give me a really good example, a modern day example of the ramifications of this discussion, this issue. This is today, this affects us today, this very day, all of you know it.
You mean like the Kotel?
No, Kotel is undisputed. Kotel is both. The Kotel is, one, on the one hand, it was conquered by the Jewish people. It was consecrated by us as Jewish forever. Plus, the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave it to the Jewish people.
We're talking about
Gaza. What about Gaza?
Do we have the right to kick out our people?
Well, no. That's not. I'm not talking about the political issue. There are many, many issues when it comes to Gaza. One of them is security. Yes. The generals have to decide. Another of them is political. The political issue of, how come we're so averse to asking Arabs to leave their land, but we don't have any problem asking Jews to leave their land? Okay, that's another question. The third question, though, is a religious question.
Yes.
Is it Eretz Israel?
The other side of the area.
No, Gaza.
Oh, no.
Gaza.
No.
Is it Eretz Israel? Is it the biblical land of Israel? It all depends on what map you use. The problem comes up that God promised the land of Israel to Abraham Avinu. God promised the land from, you know, the Nile River to the Euphrates. So is that that would make the Sinai Eretz Israel. That would make, you know, Iraq Eretz Israel, to be honest with you. Yeah.
So
the real question is, right, what's the real map?
Which is the real map?
So normally we follow, in today's day and age, the map that we follow for Eretz Israel is the map of what was conquered during Beit Sheni. The Rambam Paskins that the land that they conquered, the land that was inherited and the land that was resettled, it wasn't through war, but the land where that was settled, that's the land that's considered Eretz Israel. I don't think it includes Gaza.
Well, that's the one that doesn't include Gaza.
Yeah, I think it does not.
How about Hebron?
Hebron without a doubt.
Yeah. Which is the map that does include Gaza?
The larger one, meaning the one that God promised to Abraham Avinu. You know what I'm saying? So what do you do? What do you do when you have a discrepancy of a map that God promises, a map that's divided up and delineated? I mean, we're going to read in these parshiyot, God, you're going to divide up and you're going to get this land and that land, but they never got it because they never conquered all of it.
Because they didn't designate.
Why? They got tired. They stopped. Maybe you could even suggest, I've never seen it, but it wouldn't surprise me to see somebody suggest, maybe because the other 2.5 tribes weren't there. They didn't need that much land. What?
And they said they were going to go in.
Yeah, I said they came over to help. So let me ask you: you have a job, so you want to finish the job? You know, it's war. You're talking about years and years of war. They're tired. They want to go settle. They want to settle down. They want to build lives already. How long can you go on fighting wars? So they say, you know what? So we'll leave this nation. So we won't conquer all the land. We'll consolidate the gains we've made. We'll settle what we have. Unfortunately, you know what happens?
Yeah,
we all know what happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're living it.
Right. So this is Reuven and God's question. We want to settle here. Do they not want it to be holy? They want it to be holy. Are they rejecting the Torah?
No.
They're not rejecting the Torah. But we want to settle here.
And they don't
want
a hostile land.
Why? Simply. Why?
For their cattle.
It's good for their livelihood.
Why? Because you make more money that way.
Business.
So now, I'll ask you this question. This is Torgo. Mrs. Torgo is, she's visiting her grandchildren who are living in, where is Shire Chesed, you said?
Arzeh Habira.
Right? So it just so happens, you know, okay, your grandchildren are American. Are they coming back? Are they planning eventually
coming
returning?
Back.
They're coming back.
Where is that?
Okay, and you accept that, cool. And you accept that as a given.
Yes.
Does it upset you that they're coming back?
No, I'd love for them to stay.
Does it upset you that they're coming back?
No, thrilled. I'll have a baby here. They're coming to Detroit.
Fine.
I'll have a baby here.
Good. You're sitting at Shalosh Shittis, and there's an Israeli couple that's also sitting there enjoying Shalosh Shittis together with you and your son. And he's done the army, and the wife is, you know, went to Mechalelet Yerushalayim, and they tell you, no, we're really having a hard time. Having such a difficult time, they're thinking of moving to Detroit. How do you feel?
Oh, we feel, oh, they're abandoning the country. They should go back to
right.
Israel.
Right. Why?
Because Israel needs them.
Right.
You're
really
depends.
I'm just saying that the thinking, the way role playing.
But it's true.
Yes.
Emotionally, it's true.
It's true.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Right. When an American makes an economic choice to stay in America, or even let's say to return to America, we accept that as natural.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just using an example. It happens to me also. But when I hear of an Israeli, oh, we can debate that. When I hear of an Israeli who grew up in Israel and understands the value of Israel, and then is leaving Israel because the country is too hard, that is unnatural to me.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because we're wrong. Everything, both should be unnatural to us.
Yeah.
She should be equally upset that her children are not, our grandchildren are not going to stay.
Yeah.
Right?
I had a grandson that went to Orson Mayer for 9 weeks, and he came home, and I was so disappointed.
Oh, you thought he would stay?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you. Okay.
I was very disappointed.
And now that the Knesset has just passed a law that they're going to forgive these Yardim, they're going to give them Sechuyot, like new Aliyah.
Try to get them to come back.
To get them to come back. They're giving them all the favors. Even though they should be punished, they're giving the favors in order
to be punished.
People feel that they shouldn't get the favors because they left. They moved to Los Angeles.
Yeah. Don't worry. I don't think that's what's going to make or break them to come back. Yeah, after the army. No, they're moving. I mean, to be honest with you, life in America is easier than it is in Israel.
So this is exactly
what Moshe Rabbeinu was faced with.
Yeah.
That's what he's faced with. They come and they say to Moshe, you know, Moshe, Israel's good. Sounds really nice. But we really, we heard we can do well with an electronic store in Miami.
Exactly, you're right. There's a parallel.
So how does Moshe react? So Moshe first reacts very interestingly. Bayomer Moshe, the Bnei God, leave Nehru Uvein. Pasuk Vav. Ha'achechem yavol l'milchama v'atem teishvu po. So Moshe, first of all, there's an injustice here. You want to stay here? 1 second. How many people fought for this land? Who fought for this land? Everybody. And now what?
You want to fight yourself.
Right. V'lama sini unes leiv b'nei Yisrael me'avoris ha'aretz asher nasan lehem Hashem. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives them land. Kadosh Baruch Hu promises them Eretz Yisrael. You know what you say? In saying that you want to stay here, what you're really saying is, we don't want that. What about the morale? What about the effect you have on everybody else?
You're going to lower everybody else.
Of course. They're staying. They're fine. What am I wasting my time for?
Right.
So Moshe gives them a home of Sishmuth. You know who did this? The Meraglim. So they also, means, what does it mean? They dissuaded the heart of the children of Israel. Lavo el ha'aretz shenatan lahem Hashem. Pasuk Yud. Vayicharaf Hashem b'yom ahu v'yishava le'mor. So God got angry and he swore. Im yiru ha'anashim ha'olim mimitzayim. V'ben anasim shana v'amal la'et ha'adama shenishbati la'Abraham Yitzhak u'Yaakov. Ki lo milu acharai. Okay, fine. They don't like it. They're never going to see it. Bilti. Kalei ben Yifuneh. Hakinizir Yashua ben Nun. Ki milu acharai Hashem. Other than Kalev and Yehoshua. He continues. Vayicharaf Hashem b'Yisrael vayini ein b'amidbar arba'im shana. So God was angry at the Jewish people, and he meandered them around the desert. He held them back 40 years. Atom kol hador ha'oseh hara b'inei Hashem. Pasuk Yudalit. V'inei kantem tachat avotechem tarbut anashim chataim. Ouch. A culture, an evil culture. Bisvot od al charon af Hashem al Yisrael. Why? Kiseshuvu mi'acharav v'asav od lahanicho b'amidbar b'shichatem l'chol ha'am hazeh. Is Moshe right?
Yeah.
Is he right? Yeah.
Yes. 100%.
Mutar Javi's right.
100%.
Now, it's unclear what their initial idea was. Whether they had always planned on fighting together with.
Or they were going to send their troops.
Yeah, that's unclear. You know, to be honest with you, they didn't suggest it at the very beginning. What they first suggested was, we want to stay here. It's good for us. Right?
Yeah.
Right. It's good for us. Now, the question is, what does that mentality have? What does that effect have, the psychological effect? Like, I think to myself, so somebody comes here and he sees that it's really good here. And he sees us Jews, we built in the Zilla Book Park, and Yeshiva Akiva, and Yeshiva Beis Yehuda, and Da'achi Torah, and Yeshiva Gedola, and he says to himself, I believe in the Torah. And it would be nice if all the Jews could live in Israel. But why should I kill myself to live in Eretz Yisrael when I can be a good Jew living in America? You know, we shouldn't think for a moment that all the Israelis that come to live in America are the non-religious ones that don't value Israel. Because we're deluding ourselves. Because we all know that they come. So how much are we complicit in sending that message? How responsible are we in our creating such a viable and strong community?
We're wrong
nowadays.
What?
That's interesting. The Gemara says, I'm learning Ein Habanim Semecha. And the Gemara says that the Jews, during the times of the Gemara, especially, there were two communities. There was a community in Eretz Yisrael, and there was a community in Babylonia.
Yeah.
Okay? Both were strong Jewish communities. Which was stronger?
Babylonia.
No, incorrect.
Wasn't Babylonia?
Absolutely not. From a religious point of view, Israel was seen as the center. The Babylonian Talmud ultimately became the authority, but Israel was seen as a religious center. They had the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure Israel.
But there was a close second.
It's interesting. In his book he says that in those times, there was a great hatred on the part of the Jews living in Israel, a dislike for their Babylonian counterparts. They would call them Hani Bavlai. Those, I'll editorialize, those stinking Babylonians.
Some of them stayed there and didn't go back.
Why? Because they resented them. Mm-hmm. Here I am, busting my kishkas, trying to make a buck, living in Israel. And you live the plush life.
Same story.
Right, absolutely same story. Absolutely same story. Moreover, after the Churban, after the destruction of the temple, we're in the middle of the 3 weeks, it's good to mention. They felt, they believed, that it was the Babylonians' fault that the Bayis Sheni was destroyed. Why? Because had all the Jews, you know, all the Jews that were established Jews, had they all come back and settled in Israel, that would have been the final Beis HaMikdash. And that's where Rabbanan felt.
So is the same thing happening now?
Yeah, sort of.
Are there so many Talmud Chachamim here in America that you...
Actually, it's very clear and very well known that the Torah Center has shifted to Israel. Has shifted to Israel.
But Israel is such a... I mean, America is such a big country.
Right, the center of Torah learning is clearly in Israel. Clearly in Israel. Even, it's interesting, now you ask, who are the Gedolim of the generation of old? Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yitzchak, you know, Rav Huttner, Chassam Sofer, the Chazanish, it was half and half. Nowadays, if you want a real Shiloh, you have to ask a real Shiloh, what do you go to? Right, where do they live? Rav Auerbach is not alive anymore. Right, Rav Yashiv, Rav Nevinsal, they're all in Israel now. All the Gedolim are in Israel now. And there's a very simple reason for that. Affluence and godless don't go together very well. You want to grow to be a gadol, you have to have an incubator. And in that incubator, it doesn't have that much food. And the more well-off our students are, the less great they're going to become.
True.
That's the bottom line.
100% true.
You know, so, and it doesn't speak well for the So, you know, as much Torah as we know, there's a limit to how great we can be because of how affluent we are.
Do you know why I brought the Hamodiah?
No.
I want to show you the want ads of the places in Israel.
What do you mean the want ads?
You know how they have want ads, Brooklyn rentals,
yeah,
sales,
yeah,
and the Israel rentals and sales.
Okay, we'll take a look. I'm always interested in renting. I mean,
I brought it because I wanted
okay,
to show you.
Okay. So that's the issue that Moshe faces. He says, aside from the fact that you're not going to fight, aside from that fact, what about the psychological effect you're going to have on them? You're going to be sitting here building your cities, and they're going to be sitting there fighting, thinking to themselves, why am I killing myself? I could have stayed. Let's go on.
And not also the factor of, look at all you've been through to get, you know, to this point, and you're stopping like right before.
But what does it mean? It's a place or another place?
It's right here, really.
Do you know what I'm saying? They say, you're right, it's a land of milk and honey. But it's all on paper.
Okay.
Why didn't Moshe think of that answer right away, that they should all go together and fight, and then they could come back?
Because he doesn't want them to.
Oh, he didn't want them to do that?
No.
It's the fact that Israel...
What if I you, listen, I have two choices. I can either, you know, settle in Israel, or I can make sure, go to Israel, work for 2 years, you know, do my part, and then come back to America. What's better?
Then what?
Go there and live there. Right. You know? So, I mean, you know, Moshe clearly doesn't want them to do it. Let's see. Pasuk Des Zayin. So they approached Moshe and they said, okay, we'll build pens for our cattle and cities for our children. And we're going to go first. Right, the shadow. Until we settle them. And our children will take care of them. But we won't settle and develop our poor part until they shall develop their part. Why? Look at what they say. Very interesting. We will not inherit with them. Because we have come to our inheritance at this place. So look, but listen how they say it. Look at Rashi. Yud Tet. Be'eva ha-yardain v'hala, be'eva ha-ma'arabi. On the ma'arab is the western bank. We're not going to the western bank. Why? Ki ba'a nachalatenu. Look what they say. Kfar kiblanuha be'eva ha-mizrachi. Kvar kibla nuha. Listen to how they say it though. What do you get the impression of? What impression do you get in their language? Nobody sees what I'm saying?
Well, we inherited it, it's ours.
They say
it's reflexive.
On the one hand you could say, Moshe, we already beat them, we already conquered the land, so you know, why give it up? You know, you beat your enemy. Why give it up? Why do we have to beat our enemy so badly if we're just going to leave the land? But on the other hand, there's a tremendous amount of chutzpah in what they say. What do they say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Ki lo ninchal itam me'eva le'yardein v'hala. Let's see how you translate it. We shall not inherit with them across beyond. Ki ba'a nachlatenu eleinu. We already have it. In a sense, when you read it, you get the sense that I say to Moshe, listen, Moshe, we know we're asking for permission, but we're not really asking.
Squatter's right. This is our
permission. Do you see how I'm reading it? Right. Right. Meaning, Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to dissuade them. Do they address Moshe Rabbeinu's argument? Moshe Rabbeinu says, well, what about everybody else? What about the mentality? Well, you're going to dissuade them. So, no, we'll go fight with them. Does that address Moshe Rabbeinu's argument?
No.
Sort of. Sure, they're
kind of
half. But they say to Moshe, in a sense, one gets a sense, Moshe, we're not going.
We're
here.
We like it here.
We like it here. We're going to settle here.
It is all specific, you're right. A lot specific.
In a sense. So what does Moshe say? By Yamar Aliham Moshe says, Im ta'asun es ha-davar hazeh. Im techatzu lifnei Hashem lemilchama. Okay, if you do this. Va'avar lechem kol chalutz es hayarden lifnei Hashem. And all, you know, every chalutz, every armed person shall go before God. Ad harishu et oivav lipanav, until you drive out their enemies. V'nichvishah aras lifnei Hashem. V'achar tashuvu. And you conquer the land before God, and only then do you turn back. V'yitem nikiyim mehashem umi Yisrael. Then you will be clean of God in Israel. V'hayta ha'aretz hazot lachem la'achuzah lifnei Hashem. And the land should be an inheritance before God. V'im lo tasun kein. And if you don't do it, hinei chatatem la'Hashem, behold, you have sinned to God. U'yu chataschem asher timsha eschem. And know the sin that's going to find you. What does that mean?
Interesting.
Interesting. And do v'hayotzei pichem. Tell me if I'm reading into it. I hear Moshe Rabbeinu, and you have to read the tone. What is Moshe Rabbeinu saying? Do whatever you want. You know, if after all this time, and after all this energy, and after all we've been through, and the desert, and the wandering, and everything, this is what you want, do what you want. Pasuk Chafei. This is what they say. We'll do whatever you say. No problem. Tapenu, neshemi, biknenu, chob, jantinu, yisham, barea, gilad. Va'avadecha, yavu, kol, chalut, sarah, lifnei Hashem, lemilchama, kasher, adoni, dover. Now, we'll go to war, we'll fight, and we'll do whatever adoni, dover. Adoni, they're very interesting language. I don't have an answer for that. Why is it called Adoni? My master? How do they translate in the arts go? As my Lord speaks. I don't understand why all of a sudden it's... Yeah. Look at Chafhei, look at Rashi. Vayomer b'nei God. Vayomer is interesting. What should it really say? It said Vayomru. Vayomer b'nei God. Kulam ki'ish echad. Meaning what?
They're all together.
They're so excited about this opportunity that they have. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also another interesting subtlety. The Torah clearly speaks very, very negatively about these people. Just a little language. You know, so you'll ask me, if Moshe doesn't want them to do it,
why doesn't he say no? Well, that's such a parent thing. It's like, when they're going to do anything, you know,
He's had enough experience of all of them at this point to know.
He knows what their decision is.
What will be able to get them to do what he wants.
Now here's the problem. What effect does it have on the rest of the Jewish people?
A lot of money.
Here's the problem. The problem is it's impossible to quantify and to measure what the ultimate effect it has on the rest of the Jewish people is. But it could very well be that this is the beginning of the end. Would you say that that's a stretch? Meaning, could very well be.
Meaning the beginning of the end of them being one full piece of union?
Oh, without a doubt. No. Meaning,
sure.
Ultimately, if I were to ask you, was the settling of the land and the development of the Jewish nation a success or a failure? What would you say?
A failure.
Why?
Because
success. Let's go to success first. Why success? Why success?
Because we're there.
Well, not, oh, you mean because they made it?
They made it physically.
They physically made it, and?
And they flourished.
It grew, and they're still there. But we're in danger of losing it now.
Well, forget now. I'm talking about then. I'm talking about then. Was the settling of the land of Israel a successful endeavor or a failure?
It was successful in that they were there, period.
But depends how you define success. Miriam?
But I think it was a travesty because you had divided kingdoms. Nobody was unified.
Yes.
Nobody cared about one another. You eventually divided into two kingdoms.
Well, forget it. Before you get to the two kingdoms, let's look at the history of what happened as soon as they left the land of Israel. Okay, let's just go into a very, very brief history of the proud period of immediately after they went to the land of Israel. They go to the land of Israel, Yahshua is leading them, they enter into all these kind of miraculous wars. How much of the nation do they really conquer? Not a huge chunk.
No.
Not a huge chunk at all.
No,
they never. Hold on, they never.
I thought they had a map in here.
They have a map, a pull down map.
I thought they had maps.
Oh, yeah, that is not in the.
Letters in the.
Right, let's see if I can find the map.
Well, because Moshe wasn't with them, and they had. Joshua wasn't such
a. Well, no, you know, everything got in. Everything can get in.
Maybe because. Yes, everybody was pulling their own way.
Yeah. One second. Let's see if I can find it.
Conquered Jericho, we know that.
Here.
Never gave it back.
I like that.
Here you go. If you see this map, you'll notice this is a land of.
Where's the Jordan River?
Yeah, right.
Right? This is the land of Israel. This is the Gilead. Right? This is already Plishtim.
Is Gaza in there?
Yeah. Sure, land of Plishtim.
Yeah.
Right, up here are the Sidonim, the Sidonites in Lebanon. In here there's Amori and Yavushi. Like, there are pockets of nations throughout the entire land of Israel. There are pockets of other nations.
Yes. Let's see.
They never ultimately conquer the land. They never conquer the whole land. Now, what's the problem with never ultimately conquering the whole land?
That's the
failure. Never
fully yours. Forget even territorial cohesiveness. Forgetting that, right?
You have enemies.
Aside from the fact that you have enemies in your midst, aside from that, what's the real danger?
No.
The greatest danger that Moshe Rabbeinu warns about them over and over and over again.
They didn't care about each other.
Assimilation. The greatest danger is the Avodah Zarah. The Avodah Zarah becomes part and parcel of what the Jews do.
Right away.
Almost immediately. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, if you want to look, we'll count as we go through Dvarim. How many times does God, Moshe Rabbeinu, say to the Jewish people, destroy your enemies, don't become like them because it will destroy you? How many times? Over and over and over again.
The last week's parsha.
So if you, that's right. And if you look at Sefer Yehoshua, and look at Shoftim. Did they destroy their enemies? Clearly not. No way. Not even close. And so what happens? Jewish people are worshipping idols. Even when they're in the Navi class. The Navi class. What does Shmuel say to them? Shmuel is saying, as they're appointing a Jewish king, he says to them, if you worship idols, you and your king will be destroyed. That's what they're railing against. Did God really want to spend his time worrying about whether the Jewish people were going to worship idols or not in the land of Israel? That was not what it was supposed to be about. So there's no territorial cohesiveness. They never achieved that. They never achieved any national unity whatsoever. And there's no religious cohesiveness at all either.
Correct.
So you say, finally, David and Shlomo HaMelech, and they built the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, they had moderate successes. But was it ultimately a success?
Menashe?
No. So you mean to tell me that was God's plan? You're going to conquer, you're going to go in, you're going to Eretz Zabat Chalav and Yavash, and that was the ultimate destiny of the Jewish people? That's really what God wanted? That they should spend 400 years in civil war and infighting and this? So what did God plan? What did God want? Why did he take us out of Egypt? For that? To build the Beis HaMikdash 400 years later? Well, we're working on it. Forget now. Let's worry about then. 400 years it took. From the time they left Egypt, it was either 420 or 430 years or 410, I remember. Something like that. Some crazy number. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. So what did God want? Right. So I submit that perhaps this is what God wanted. Perhaps if they had gone in as a unit. Correct. And stayed together as a unit. And fought for one another as a unit. they would have conquered the whole of the land of Israel as it was divided up. Hold on a second. Let's see if we can figure it out. There should be a map of the Shvatim as it was divided up. They do have maps.
Wasn't the land divided up like by lottery?
What's that? Yeah, it was divided up by lottery. Let me see if I can find it. I don't know. Maybe there's not a map of which tribe is supposed to get what. I don't know. There's not a map of these tribes. I don't have a map. But it was clearly divided up, the whole of the land of Israel, wasn't it? I mean, we've all seen the map. You've got this chunk and that chunk and this chunk and that chunk, and it fills, and you throw the puzzle.
Right.
But what happened? Not even close. First of all, what happens to Reuben and Gad and half of the tribe of Manasseh? What happens to them ultimately? They disappear. Absolutely disappear. Right? Maybe that wasn't such a good move on their part.
After how many years did they disappear?
I don't know. I have to tell
you. A long, long time.
Doesn't take that long.
Not
that long. What do you mean? I mean from when they divided?
Yes, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom.
It's interesting. I don't really know. Obviously, I don't know Navi well enough. But you don't hear much about these people on the eastern bank of the Jordan River. You never hear anything about them.
We need to see a timeline. I thought I had one.
So, do they disappear because they separated themselves? Is that?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure there are studies about them. Oh, I think they did, but it probably just didn't happen because you married in where you lived. You married usually you mostly married in the tribe.
If I marry somebody from another, he gets.
Yeah, well, let's be honest with you. You know, way back when, who did you marry in the shtetl? Why? Because everybody was your cousin in the town. And look at Detroit. Everybody's a cousin of somebody else, and this is Detroit. Right, but you're a transplant from Ohio. There you go. There you go. That's right. Look at the Salison. You can't marry a first cousin, but everybody's your second or third cousin.
Yeah, I know.
First cousin, yeah. They did all the time. Absolutely. One second. So what I'm suggesting to you is the following. Had the Jewish people of tribes of Reuben, you're talking about 2.5 tribes, 1/5 of the people.
Yeah.
Had they entered, so you have to think about, first of all, the territory they no longer needed. But not only the territory they no longer needed, what was the cumulative psychological effect? We're going to go and fight for you. At some point they say, you know what, we're done. And what if I say, you know, no, you're not done. You have to stay. Now you have to stay. Oh, that would go real well.
Yeah.
You know, your wife is back home. You haven't seen her in 5 years.
Yeah.
You've been fighting for 5 years. So you say to yourself at some point, in a few minutes, you say, you know what, 5 is enough. I fulfilled my commitment. Ah, God says you didn't. No.
That's his opinion.
No. Right, it's his opinion. So what is the cumulative psychological effect? What is the cumulative military effect? What is the cumulative religious effect?
So what was God's plan?
So I'm suggesting to you that perhaps had they all gone in. Like, meaning, if you say to me, well, if that's true, then why does Moshe Rabbeinu allow them to go to do what they do?
Because he figured maybe they would stay on the side and not go at all. Yeah, they wouldn't go at all.
Why does the Kaddish allow us to do it? You know, what's God's plan for me? So if I were to ask you, you know, what is the ultimate, very best, you know, possible outcome of my life? If I made every right choice, and you know what I'm saying? And did every absolute good thing and never sinned and never made a mistake and never did. So, yeah, then, you know, you could envision the very best. But, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to do it for me. I have to do it on my own.
You gather all your eyes and cross all your teeth.
Just like we have individual choice. Right, nations also have free will. Kadosh Baruch Hu can't force us. So he says, okay. But understand, just like I began with that article, understand that the choices that you make have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that 2.5 tribes can dwell on the eastern bank of the Jordan River and there are going to be no consequences is a mistake and a fallacy. You're living in a dream world. And the same thing.
I don't
know. It's a good, no. I mean, it's God's choice. It's Moshe Rabbeinu's choice.
He just talked to Moshe Rabbeinu. They didn't talk to the other tribes.
It's interesting. Let's read on for a little bit. By Sadla Moshe Eish El Azarkai on page 914 at the top. By Moshe Eish El Azar HaKohen Beit Yoshua Ben Nun. Ve'et Rashi Avosa Matos to Bnei Yisrael. Vayom Moshe Aleihem. Moshe says, Im Yavu Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven Itchem Et HaYarden. If you're going to go over the Yarden, Kol Chalutz Melchama Lifnei Hashem. V'nichbesha ha'aretz lifneichem. Right? And the land will be conquered. U'netana netatem lahem et eretz ha'gila la'achuza. V'im lo ya'avru chalutzim mitchem. If they don't go, v'nochzu betochachem be'eretz Kanaan. Then they have to get their lands in Eretz Kanaan. Oh great, you know, like, sorry. Not only, like, if they don't do what you want, then they have to, then we're going to force them to live in the land of Israel. That'll work really well.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go fight for the land of Canaan. We're going to keep this west, this east bank. Ben Yosef, Ha'aretz le'areha b'gulot areha aretz saviv. There's only one interesting thing that shows up here that seems out of the ordinary, unusual. What seems unusual?
Why do they say Menashe ben Yosef?
Well, two questions.
Yeah.
Where did Menashe come from?
Yeah.
Where did Menashe come from, interestingly? And why only half of Menashe?
Yeah.
The other half went over.
What?
The other half went over to the other side.
Okay, I have two suggestions. I just thought one. The first suggestion I thought of is, interestingly enough, I heard from Rabbi Shafter from the Joseph Soloveitchik Institute. He said he wanted Moshe Rabbeinu wanted the Bnei Yisrael on the east bank of the Jordan River to remember that they're still part of another. That they're missing something. They're still part of a larger Klal Yisrael. Ah, you're settling on the East Bank, you're going to build up your nice little country, it's separate, you're separators, you have a whole culture, you have a whole way, and before you know it, yeah, it's not just we're Ashkenazic and we're Sephardic Jews, we're East Bankers. And you forget that you're really part of a larger Klal Yisrael. So therefore, says Rabbi Shachter, it was there to remind them, half a tribe was on one side, and half a tribe was on the other side, to remind them, you're part of something bigger than this.
Mm-hmm.
Part of something greater. But I think I want to say something different. Who made the request? Who made the request?
Reuven
and God. And look what happens. Between the 10 minutes it takes them to make the request and Moshe Rabbeinu's response, what? And what happens? Lo and behold, half of the Menashe says, hey, we never thought we could do that.
Let us do it too.
And it only and look and so what happens to the tribe of Menashe? Ultimately, it's ripped apart because the Shvatim were tribes. They were, as you see later on, they acted as, you know, like if you ever read about the United States before the Revolution, the states were states. The states had you know,
their
individuality, their own rights, their own laws, their own minhagim. So what happened to Shevet Menashe? Goodbye. So much for Shevet Menashe.
Is that the blessing that the fathers give to their children?
Oh, those are the tribes.
Different.
That's the tribe. Those are the actual sons. You probably think they're from Menashe, the actual
son.
From
that tribe.
Yeah, from that tribe. But it's
they were the two brothers.
Not only is Moshe Rabbeinu right, not only is Moshe Rabbeinu correct, he's right even before it starts. He can't even stop it from happening right under his own nose.
But it's just
so what's our here. So what?
It's another opinion, another
view. I'm allowed to be to darshan.
You're right.
What does it say? I'm curious.
Seeing that the land of Gilead was too large. No, wait. That you had not asked to them. Why did Moshe include them?
Yeah.
Several approaches.
Seeing that the land of Gilead was too large for two tribes, Moshe asked if other tribes would prefer to settle there. In response, part of Manasseh volunteered because they had abundant flocks. That's it.
It's interesting. Look at the other ones. That's Ramban. Look at the second one. Moses tried to avoid the danger that the two tribes on the east bank would tend to be isolated from the rest of the nation and failed to benefit from the greater holiness of Eretz Israel.
That's
what I just said.
Yeah.
By placing half of Manasseh there, he assured that the eastern part of Manasseh would remain in close contact with the family to the west.
That's yours, right.
Look at the third one. Moshe insisted that the families of Manasseh settle in the east, for no Jewish community can maintain its spiritual health, even its existence, unless it has outstanding Torah figures to lead it.
Mm-hmm.
The tribe of Manasseh included such people, and Moshe could not consent to the request of Gad and Reuven unless part of Manasseh would volunteer to live on the east bank and place their knowledge at the service of their brethren.
Mm-hmm. And doing so, Moshe meant to set a precedent for the rest of Jewish history.
Mm-hmm. Which is also an interesting concept.
Yeah.
So what's our responsibility, us American Jews? You know, it's so interesting. When you go to Israel, and you live in, you know, I went to Shalvim, and it's a Hesder Yeshiva, and then the Israelis there, they're raised on Israel. I mean, Israel is part and part of who they are. Of their, not just their Jewish identity, of their religious identity. It's part and part of what it means to be a Jew. So you get there and they say to you, how could you live in America? We don't understand. And they don't understand. They legitimately don't understand. And then, you know, when the, you know, members of the Kollel, they come here, Kollel Torah Mitzvah, they come here, and they all of a sudden start to understand. You know, you're raised here, you live here. But when you learn a section like this, it should make us think, what's our achrayus? What's our responsibility? You know, we live in a time now, for the first time in centuries, literally centuries, where this Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Manasseh exists again. We live in a time now where we have to start thinking about what is our responsibility as a community vis-a-vis the community of Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, as an individual, you have to give support. And I'm not talking about financial support, but what is our responsibility psychologically as a community?
The community comes first. We all have to worry about the community, wherever you are.
I'm saying, but what is our community's responsibility towards the larger Knesset Israel? And I think it's quite clear from the Torah just how Moshe Rabbeinu felt about their choice. And I think it's also quite clear, as we've discussed, what the effect their choice has. So we have to ask ourselves, what effect is our choice have? Or our lack of a choice. You know, I'm not saying it's easy, but we have to ask, what are the ramifications? How is that affecting the Jewish people as a whole? And how do you change it? Heavy questions for the 3 weeks. Mm.